It's around 8:30 p.m. on May 25th, 2020. At the intersection of East 38th Street and Chicago Avenue in Minneapolis, Minnesota, was the aftermath of something horrific that had just occurred there. Donald Williams was calling 911.
911, what's the address of the emergency?
Officer 987 killed a citizen in front of a Chicago store. He just pretty much just killed this guy that wasn't resisting arrest. He had his knee on the dude's neck the whole time, Officer 987. The man went, stopped breathing. He wasn't resisting arrest or nothing. He was already in handcuffs. They pretty much just killed the dude. I don't even know if he's dead for sure, but he was not responsive when the ambulance just came and got him.
Donald was talking fast. He would later say he called 911 because he didn't know what else to do about what he had just witnessed. He told the dispatcher that he saw a police officer, quote, pretty much just kill this guy who wasn't resisting arrest. He had his knee on this dude's neck the whole time, he said. Officer 987, referring to the officer's badge number he had seen. He said the man hadn't been resisting, that he was already in handcuffs when the officer knelt on him, pinning him down on the ground. Then the man stopped breathing and was non-responsive when the ambulance came, he said.
Would you like to speak with the sergeant?
Yeah, like that was bogus. Guess what they just did to this man. He was non-responsive. He wasn't resisting arrest or any of it.
Okay, let me get you over to the desk. You can request to speak with the sergeant, okay?
Yeah, and I'm sitting here talking to with another off-duty firefighter that just stayed here watching in front of us as well.
Okay.
And she told him to check the man's pulse, but they wouldn't even check the pulse.
Okay, 1 second.
He told the dispatcher that he had been standing there watching with a woman who was an off-duty firefighter. That woman told the officer to check the man for a pulse, he said, but the officer refused. The dispatcher told Donald to hold on while she transferred him to a sergeant.
Y'all murderers, bro. Y'all murderers. You gonna kill yourself. I already know it. 2 more years. You gonna shoot yourself. Murderers, bro.
Donald Williams wasn't the only one who called someone for help after witnessing what had happened. Jenna Scurry was working the Channel 1 dispatch at the time. She had initially received a call about a man with a counterfeit $20 bill and had dispatched officers to the area. Through her monitors, she watched as the officers encountered the man and then got into a struggle with him as they tried to put him into a squad car. Then she watched as the officers knelt on top of the man, pinning him to the ground. They stayed that way for such a long time that she thought her screen had frozen at first. But then she realized it hadn't. The situation didn't feel right to her, so she called a sergeant. By then, an ambulance had arrived on the scene. She told the sergeant, "You can call me a snitch if you want to," and told him what she saw on her monitors.
"You can call me a snitch if you want to, but we have the cameras up for 320's call. Oh, did they already put him in the... They must have already started moving him. And 320 over at Cup Foods.
Okay.
I don't know if they had used force or not. They got something out of the back of the squad, and all of them sat on this man. So I don't know if they needed you or not, but they haven't said anything to me yet.
Yeah, they haven't said anything. This is just a takedown, which doesn't count, but...
Okay.
I'll find out.
No problem. We don't get to ever see it, so when we see it, we're just like, well, that looks a little different. All right, thank you.
It looks a little different, she said. The man who had been pinned down by the officers was 46-year-old George Floyd. Later, a disturbing video was posted to Facebook by another bystander, a video that showed Officer Derek Chauvin kneeling on top of George Floyd, pinning him to the ground, while Floyd and a small group of bystanders pleaded with him to get off. "I can't breathe," Floyd could be heard saying in the video. Until eventually, after 9 minutes and 29 seconds, an ambulance arrived and Officer Chauvin finally got up. By then, Floyd was unconscious and without a pulse. He was later pronounced dead. The video of what happened went viral, and the next day, four officers involved in the incident were fired. Protests broke out all across the United States, with people outraged over George Floyd's death. Protesters carried signs with the faces of not only George Floyd, but other Black people who had been recently killed by law enforcement, including Breonna Taylor, who was shot by police in her home.
What do you want?
Justice!
When do you want it?
Now!
What do you want?
Justice!
When do you want it?
Now!
44-year-old Officer Derek Chauvin was arrested and charged with third-degree murder and second-degree manslaughter. Through their attorney, George Floyd's family released a statement saying that Officer Chauvin's arrest was a welcome but overdue step, and that they want a first-degree murder charge as well as the other officers arrested. Their statement also said, in part, quote, "The pain that the Black community feels over this murder and what it reflects about the treatment of Black people in America is raw and is spilling onto streets across America. For four officers to inflict this kind of unnecessary, lethal force or watch it happen, despite outcry from witnesses who were recording the violence, demonstrates a breakdown in training and policy by the city. Today, George Floyd's family is having to explain to his children why their father was executed by police on video. It's essential that the city closely examines and changes its policing policies and training procedures to correct for the lack of proper field supervision, the use of appropriate non-lethal restraint techniques, the ability to recognize medical signs associated with restriction of airflow, and the legal duty to seek emergency medical care and stop a civil rights violation."
You will learn that on May 25th of 2020, Mr. Derek Chauvin betrayed this badge when he used excessive and unreasonable force upon the body of Mr. George Floyd.
In today's episode, I'm covering the death of George Floyd and the trial of Officer Derek Chauvin. Would there be legal consequences for the horror depicted in that viral video? Stay tuned. This is Jillian, and in partnership with Law and Crime, you are listening to Court Junkie, episode 154. I get many messages and tweets from court junkies who have recently taken or are getting ready to take their LSAT. So when I saw that Blueprint was going to be sponsoring my show and giving me a discount code for my listeners, I was pretty excited. If you're looking to take your LSAT or MCAT, you've got to try Blueprint. Blueprint's test prep delivers life-changing score increases. On average, their students receive 11-point increases for the LSAT, for you future lawyers, and 13-point increases for the MCAT, for you future doctors. Blueprint was founded on the idea that test prep can actually be entertaining and effective, so they use unique animations and memorable graphics, plus humorous pop culture references to make your experience engaging and enjoyable. They also have amazing analytics, which will help you quickly diagnose the underlying patterns of what you got wrong and why, so you can improve faster. And their numbers don't lie. Blueprint has helped over 50,000 LSAT students and 60,000 MCAT students improve their scores. With a 4.8 Trustpilot score, you know you can trust them. And this is important. Even if you're not taking one of these tests, make sure to let your friends or family know about Blueprint. It'll change their future for the better. I know I've been telling all my friends who are studying for these tests about Blueprint. Blueprint's got an incredible contest going on right now to win $20,000 towards your law school tuition. Just head on over to their site and enter to win. And as promised, Blueprint has an exclusive offer just for Court Junkie listeners. Blueprint rarely offers discounts this big, but for the first 100 listeners of my show who go to blueprintprep.com and use the promo code COURT, you will receive 20% off. That's over $200 off your LSAT or MCAT class if you go to blueprintprep.com and use our promo code COURT. Remember the saying, if you love something, set it free? If it doesn't come back, it was never yours to begin with. Well, when it comes to your identity, the folks at LifeLock are calling BS. All those nights working overtime, saving up all that money, paying off all that debt, and now some identity thief wants to try and set it free? They say that's ridiculous, and I agree. That's why LifeLock helps monitor your info and alerts you to potential identity threats. And if you do become a victim, a dedicated U.S.-based specialist will be there to help fix it. No one can prevent all identity theft or monitor all transactions at all businesses. But when identity thieves try to take what's yours, you don't have to take it lying down. And while they aren't exactly setting it free, you can save up to 25% off your first year by going to lifelock.com/court. That's lifelock.com/court for 25% off. According to the autopsy report from the Hennepin County Medical Examiner, George Floyd died from, quote, cardiopulmonary arrest, complicating law enforcement subdual, restraint, and neck compression. The report went on to say that in Floyd's system at the time of his death were fentanyl and recent methamphetamine use. The manner of death was ruled a homicide. That's not the last you'll hear about the autopsy report. More on that later. At a news conference, the family's attorney, Ben Crump, said Floyd died at the scene and that the ambulance was the hearse. Minnesota Attorney General Keith Ellison, who was made the lead prosecutor in the case, made an additional announcement on June 3, 2020. The charges against Officer Derek Chauvin were upgraded, and the other officers at the scene were arrested.
First, today, I filed an amended complaint that charges former Minneapolis police officer Derek Chauvin with murder in the second degree for the death of George Floyd. I believe the evidence available to us now supports the stronger charge of second-degree murder. We've consulted with each other, and we agree. Second, today, arrest warrants were issued for former Minneapolis police officers J.A. King, Thomas Lane, and Tu Tao. Finally, I'd like to announce that today, Hennepin County Attorney Michael Freeman and I filed a complaint that charges police officer King, Lane, and Tao with aiding and abetting murder in the second degree, a felony offense. I strongly believe that these developments are in the interest of justice for Mr. Floyd, his family, our community, and our state.
He said their goal was justice for George Floyd.
To the Floyd family, to our beloved community, and to everyone that is watching, I say, George Floyd mattered. He was loved. His family was important. His life had value. And we will seek justice for him and for you, and we will find it.
Meanwhile, the other three officers, J. Alexander King, Thomas Lane, and Tu Tao, appeared in court. At the hearing, Officer Lane and Officer King's attorneys argued that Officer Chauvin was the senior officer and that their clients, both of whom had only been on the job for 4 days, had tried to step in. Officer Lane had reportedly asked the 19-year veteran, Officer Chauvin, if they should roll Floyd over onto his side, but he was rebuffed. Officer King had reportedly tried to communicate to Officer Chauvin, too. All three were released on $750,000 bond with conditions. On October 7th, 2020, Officer Chauvin posted $1 million bond, and he too was released while awaiting trial. A few months later, it was decided that Officer Chauvin would be tried separately from the other officers in a trial that news stations would later call the next trial of the century. Opening statements in Officer Derek Chauvin's trial began in March 2021. The trial was not only live-streamed online, but witness testimony was also broadcast on multiple TV stations throughout the country. He was facing up to 40 years in prison if convicted. By now, the image of Officer Chauvin, a white police officer, kneeling on top of George Floyd, a black man struggling to breathe, had gone viral. Prosecutor Jerry Blackwell wanted the jury to now know more about George Floyd.
George Perry Floyd. His family members call him Perry because he was not simply just an object of the excessive use of force of police. He's a real person. And I want you to learn something about it. At the time that he was killed, he was 46 years old. He was a father, a brother, a cousin, a friend to many. He's originally from Houston, Texas. Even before Houston, he was from my original home state, North Carolina. Fayetteville, North Carolina, before Houston, is where his family was from. He excelled in basketball and football. Loved shooting hoops, even to the end, and kept himself fit that way. He moved to Minnesota from Texas for a fresh start. And the rest of this you learn about him. His work as a security guard, that he lost his job when COVID hit. He's a COVID survivor, George Floyd was. And he lost his job as an employer was forced to close given COVID. But the point to all of this is that we want you to know something about who George Floyd was as a person, because he was somebody to a lot of other bodies in the world.
So what happened that night? Blackwell told the jury that after a cashier at Cup Foods called the police after believing he received a counterfeit $20 bill from Floyd, police officers then approached him as he sat in his vehicle outside the store.
You'll be able to see how when they approached his car, came to his window within seconds, they had pulled out their gun, were pointing it at his head, and were using the foulest of language. You'll be able to see them get him out of his car, put him right away in the handcuffs. You'll see them pat him down so that they know he doesn't have any weapons. And not only that, you'll be able to hear George Floyd when he approaches the squad car saying he is terrified to be put into that squad car. You hear him say, I think I'm going to die if they put me in there. I think I'll die if I'm put in that squad car. He was terrified. You'll hear him talk about that. He says he was claustrophobic. And then he asked to count himself. Let me count my way into the squad car. And he starts trying to count. One, two, up. They manhandle him, shove him into the car with the handcuffs on. And you'll see how he freaks out from that. You hear him saying, I can't breathe in the back of the squad car. And we will show you in the back of the squad car where Mr. Chauvin at one point had his hands around Mr. Floyd's neck in the squad car, and another, his arm and elbow around his neck with Mr. Floyd's head here, when they were pulling him out of the squad car, putting him on the ground in the prone position, and when the 9 minutes and 29 seconds begins.
He said at the scene, there were five grown men, armed police officers, all over a fake $20 bill.
There were five there. For a man who didn't threaten anybody, you will see, committed no act of violence in any way, who didn't try to run away, and who was put in the prone position this way with five grown men, armed police officers present. None of that, ladies and gentlemen, we submit, you will find, to be an excuse for what happened in the 9 minutes and 29 seconds.
He said Officer Chauvin had Floyd pinned to the ground, kneeling on his neck and back, for 9 minutes and 29 seconds, during which Floyd said 27 times that he could not breathe.
And you'll be able to see for yourself that when Mr. Floyd was in distress, Mr. Chauvin wouldn't help him, didn't help him. But you're also going to see that he stopped anybody else from being able to help him.
He told the jury that the Minneapolis Police Department's core principle is in your custody is in your care, meaning they're supposed to provide care for whoever is in custody. He pointed out that the motto of the Minneapolis Police Department is to protect with courage, to serve with compassion. As for their approach to use of force against its citizens, their policy book reads, quote, sanctity of life and the protection of the public shall be the cornerstones of the Minneapolis Police Department's use of force.
Symbol of public faith, ethics to police service, sanctity of life, all of this matters tremendously to this case, because you will learn that on May 25th of 2020, Mr. Derek Chauvin betrayed this badge when he used excessive and unreasonable force upon the body of Mr. George Floyd, that he put his knees upon his neck and his back, grinding and crushing him until the very breath, no, ladies and gentlemen, until the very life were squeezed out of him.
He said Officer Chauvin was aware that Floyd was not armed, that he hadn't threatened anyone, he was in handcuffs, and was completely in control of the police. He was defenseless.
You will learn what happened in that 9 minutes and 29 seconds, the most important numbers you will hear in this trial at 9:29. What happened in those 9 minutes and 29 seconds when Mr. Derek Chauvin was applying this excessive force to the body of Mr. George Floyd?
He said they want to give Officer Chauvin a fair trial, but that they plan to prove that he was anything other than innocent. Eric Nelson was the attorney for Officer Chauvin. He said this case is about more than just 9 minutes and 29 seconds.
Upon their arrival, the first thing that Officer Chauvin sees is Officers King and Lane struggling with Mr. Floyd. Mr. Chauvin asked the officers, is he under arrest? Yes. And then Officer Chauvin began to assist them in their efforts to get him into the squad car.
He said the three officers could not overcome the strength of George Floyd.
Mr. Chauvin stands 5'9", 140 pounds. Mr. Floyd is 6'3", weighs 223 pounds.
He said the intersection where this took place is considered a high crime area, and so there's a video system set up to surveil the entire intersection. With that video system, he said you'll be able to see the squad car rocking back and forth as the officers struggled with Floyd. This was not an easy struggle, he said.
As the struggle continues, you will see and hear both what Mr. Floyd was saying to the officers and the officers' responses to him. Mr. Floyd does end up on the street and appeared to continue to struggle to these officers, so much so that they considered applying what's called the maximal restraint technique. It used to be called the hobble or the hog tie. Mr. Chauvin used his knee to pin Mr. Floyd's left shoulder blade and back to the ground, and his right knee to pin Mr. Floyd's left arm to the ground. Officer King was placed below Mr. Floyd's buttocks, and Officer Lane was at the feet. And you will see and hear them continue to struggle with Mr. Floyd as he's attempting to kick.
Nelson said that while this was going on, a crowd developed, watching and recording. He said initially they were passive, but as the situation went on, they began to get angry and grow upset with the officers. As the crowd grew in size, he said, seemingly so did their anger. They called the officers names and screamed at them. He called it a high-stress use of force situation.
And you will learn that Derek Chauvin did exactly what he had been trained to do over the course of his 19-year career. The use of force is not attractive, but it is a necessary component of policing.
He said there were two searches conducted of the squad car. In the second search, agents discovered several pieces of partially dissolved pills. Those pills were analyzed and shown to be consistent to pills found in Floyd's car, and they contained methamphetamine and fentanyl, along with the DNA and saliva of George Floyd.
The evidence will show that Mr. Floyd died of a cardiac arrhythmia that occurred as a result of hypertension, his coronary disease, the ingestion of methamphetamine and fentanyl, and the adrenaline flowing through his body, all of which acted to further compromise an already compromised heart.
So while the prosecution says that George Floyd died due to Officer Chauvin kneeling on his neck and cutting off his airway, the defense says he died from heart problems and drug use. Before I get into the prosecution's case, I think it's important to understand the timeline they presented to the jury of that 9 minutes and 29 seconds when Officer Chauvin was kneeling on top of George Floyd. At 8:19 p.m. and 14 seconds, George Floyd was handcuffed on the ground. At 8:22 and 24 seconds, George Floyd says, "My stomach hurts, my neck hurts, everything hurts." At 8:23:59, George Floyd's final words were, "I can't breathe." Now, throughout this initial 4 minutes and 45 seconds, Chauvin is kneeling on Floyd's neck and back. Floyd says 27 times, "I can't breathe." At 8:24 and 48 seconds, George Floyd is silent with sporadic movement. Officer Lane says, which can be heard on the body camera video, "Think he's passing out." At 8:25 and 49 seconds, Officer King can't find a pulse. Floyd is silent and non-responsive. At 8:27 and 26 seconds, an ambulance arrives on the scene. And at 8:28 and 43 seconds, Officer Chauvin lifts his knee off of Floyd's neck. Throughout this time, as Floyd was lying on the ground, on his stomach, with Chauvin's knees on his neck and back, several people from the community had gathered, watching, recording, and objecting to what was happening.
These people were randomly chosen from the community. People from the community randomly chosen by fate. And they were coming from different places, and they were going to different places, and they had different purposes. All of them. Random members of the community. All converged by fate, at one single moment in time to witness something, to witness 9 minutes and 29 seconds of shocking abuse of authority, to watch a man die.
Those people were among the first witnesses in the trial, telling the jury what they saw and heard that night. Donald Williams, whose 911 call you heard at the beginning of this episode, testified that he's a professional fighter, and when he saw Officer Chauvin kneeling on George Floyd, he had to say something to him. What he said? He told Officer Chauvin that he had George in what's called a blood choke, which he knew about from his time as a fighter. He told the court that a blood choke specifically cuts off the circulation to your arteries. He said initially, after officers struggled with him in the car, they took Floyd out of the car. Floyd then thanked them, but then they pinned him to the ground. He said Floyd was speaking in a distressed way.
And what kinds of things led you to believe he was distressed?
He was vocalizing it to the officer. He said, "My stomach hurt. I can't breathe. My head hurts. I want my mom." Yeah, those are the things that he repeatedly said. He wanted to get out the car. He said he's sorry for what he did. He pleaded with my mans and told him, like, "I'm sorry. I shouldn't pretty much have to die."
He was asked to describe Floyd's condition as time progressed.
As time progressed, so when I first arrived on the scene, Mr. Floyd was vocalizing his sorriness and his pain and his distress that he was going through. The more that the knee was blockly on his neck and shimmies were going on, the more you seen Floyd fade away and slowly fade away, and like the fish in a bag, you seen his eyes slowly, you know, pale out and again slowly roll to the back of his eyes. And he, so this is what I seen, this is what I heard, and that's how, you know, what it was. Like, he was going through distress because of the knee, and he vocalized it that, "I can't breathe, I need to get up, and I'm sorry." And his eyes slowly rolled to the back of his head. You seen the blood coming out of his nose. You heard him tell him before he stopped speaking that, "My stomach hurts." And those, most of the times, is the last bowel movement of your life. So from there on, he was lifeless. He didn't move. He didn't speak. He didn't have no life in him, no more on his body movements.
Donald teared up on the stand as he listened to his 911 call again. On cross, Chauvin's attorney, Eric Nelson, pointed out that in his statement to police afterwards, Donald said he really wanted to beat the shit out of the officers who did this. He admitted that he said that, but said he wasn't angry. It was professional, he said. He was then asked about things he said to Chauvin at the scene.
You called him a tough guy.
I did.
You called him a real man.
I did.
You called him such a man.
I did.
You called him bogus.
I did.
You called him a bum at least 13 times.
That's what you counted in the video?
That's what I counted.
And that's what you got, 13.
And that was early on, right? Those terms grew more and more angry. Would you agree with that?
They grew more and more pleading for life.
All right. After you called him a bum 13 times, you called him a fucking bum.
That's what you heard?
Did you say that?
Is that what you heard?
I'm asking you, sir.
Did you say that? You heard that. I'm pretty sure you did.
You call him a fucking pussy-ass bitch.
If that's what you heard, I'm sure that's what
I'm asking you. Did you say that?
If that's what the video recalled, that's what I did.
You called him a bitch.
If that's the video you heard from view?
It's a yes or no, sir.
If that's what was heard in the video, yes, I did.
And at one point, you said that Officer Tao pushed you.
That's correct. He put his hand in my chest, is what I said.
He admitted he said those things, but again said that he was professional. You can't paint me out to be angry, he said. The next four witnesses were all minors when the incident occurred. Darnella Frazier was up first. She was 17 at the time and is now 18. Normally, I would just use her first name or not identify her at all, but Darnella has since gone public. She was the one who had initially posted that viral video on Facebook, the video that captured the attention of so many and potentially changed the entire trajectory of this case. Darnella testified that she was walking towards Cup Foods with her little cousin when she passed a group of officers on top of someone. She walked her cousin to the door, watched her go inside, and then walked back. She described what she saw to the jury.
I see a man on the ground, and I see a cop kneeling down on him.
Was there anything about the scene that you didn't want your cousin to see?
Yes.
And what was that?
A man terrified, scared, begging for his life.
Is that why you directed your cousin to go on into Cup Foods?
Yes.
And then when you saw what was happening there at the scene, what was it about the scene that caused you to come back?
It wasn't right. He was suffering. He was in pain.
She said she pulled out her phone to record what she was seeing.
I heard George Floyd saying, "I can't breathe, please get off of me. I can't breathe." He cried for his mom. He was in pain. It seemed like he knew. It seemed like he knew it was over for him.
She testified that it looked like Officer Chauvin was kneeling harder on George Floyd as she recorded. She was asked if she thought the officers were afraid of them, the bystanders watching and recording. She said no.
Would you tell the ladies and gentlemen how you're viewing, experiencing what happened to George Floyd has affected your life?
When I look at George Floyd, I look at my dad, I look at my brothers, I look at my cousins, my uncles, because they are all black. I have a black father, I have a black brother, I have black friends. And I look at that and I look at how that could have been one of them. It's been nights. I stayed up apologizing to to George Floyd for not doing more and not physically interacting and not saving his life. But it's like, it's not what I should have done. It's what he should have done.
The next witness was Darnella's 9-year-old cousin. She said she saw Officer Chauvin stay kneeling on top of Floyd, even after the ambulance came and paramedics asked him to get off. She said it made her feel sad and kind of mad. It felt like he was stopping his breathing and hurting him, she said. The next witness was 17 at the time, 18 now. She too recorded what she saw on her phone. Her video was played for the jury. In the video, she can be heard saying he hasn't moved in over a minute.
He looked like he was struggling at first, and he looked distressed, and he looked like he was fighting to breathe.
So when you say struggling and fighting to breathe and in distress, did it look like he was getting into a physical fight with the officers, or did it look like he was struggling in terms of his ability to breathe?
He was struggling with his ability to breathe. He was focused on trying to breathe.
The last underage witness was 17 years old and was friends with the prior witness. She said she heard George Floyd yell out for his mom. She also told the jury that Officer Tao, who was Chauvin's partner, was hostile. She saw him push one of the other bystanders onto the sidewalk. And at one point, she watched Officer Chauvin grab his mace while he was on top of Floyd and start shaking it at them. She said she felt scared and didn't know what was going to happen. Genevieve Hansen was another bystander at the scene. She testified that she's a firefighter and certified EMT. She too recorded what she saw and called 911 on the officers. She testified that she knew Floyd needed medical attention, knew he had an altered level of consciousness, and wanted to know if he had a pulse. Another video was shown in court. In it, the bystanders are yelling at the officers. Officer Chauvin is kneeling on top of George Floyd, and Officer Tao is in front of him, facing the bystanders, as though he's guarding the scene.
Get the fuck off of him! What is wrong with y'all?
What the fuck?
What the fuck?
I'm not scared of you, bro.
You're a fucking pussy. I hope you know you're a pussy on God. I hope your ass rot in hell.
The bystanders plead with the officers to check his pulse. At one point, Officer Tao can be heard telling them, "This is why you don't do drugs, kids."
Is he breathing right now? Check his pulse.
How long do I have this conversation?
Check his pulse. Okay. Check his pulse, Tao. In the video, when the ambulance pulls up, someone can be heard yelling, "You're still on him, 3 minutes." Genevieve Hansen said at that point she knew he was dead or not breathing. On cross, she was asked about how she got angry while watching what was happening.
As you were there between 8:26 and 8:30, so in about those 4 minutes, you would agree that your own demeanor got louder and more frustrated and upset.
Um,
Frustrated, I'm not sure is the word I would use.
Angry?
More desperate.
You called the officers a bitch, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I got quite angry after Mr. Floyd was loaded into the ambulance, and there was no point in trying to reason with them anymore because they had just killed somebody.
She was asked if some people there were swearing, and she said absolutely. She was asked if anyone else appeared to be angry.
And would you describe other people's demeanors as upset or angry?
I don't know if you've seen anybody be killed, but it's upsetting.
Christopher Martin testified that he was working as a cashier at Cup Foods at East 38th Street and Chicago Avenue on May 25th, when George Floyd bought a pack of cigarettes with a $20 bill. He said the bill had a blue pigment to it, so he assumed it was fake. According to store policy, if they accept a fake bill, it has to come out of their own pocket. And so his manager told him to tell Floyd to come back inside the store. He went to Floyd's car twice, and after the second time, his manager told an employee to call the police, since Floyd didn't come back to the store. Christopher said that as paramedics were working on Floyd, he was feeling disbelief and guilt. He said if he just didn't take the bill, this could have been avoided.
Well, what did you see the officer on Mr. Floyd? What was the relation of their two bodies? What was happening there?
George was motionless, limp, and Chauvin seemed very... He was in a resting state, meaning like he just rested his knee on his neck.
Charles McMillan was another bystander at the scene. He said he saw officers at Floyd's car and started watching what was going on. He saw Floyd struggling with the officers and told him to comply with them. "You can't win," he recalled telling him. The video was played for the jury of the officers trying to get Floyd into the squad car. Floyd can be heard telling them that he's claustrophobic.
God, I'm claustrophobic.
Get in the car.
Get in the car. Get me in the front. Please.
No, you're not getting in the front.
I'm claustrophobic. So I was
in the car.
Okay, man. I'm not a bad guy, man.
Get in the car.
I'm not a bad guy.
The officers finally take him out of the car. Floyd thanks them. They then tell him to get on the ground and put him in the prone position. Charles McMillan began crying on the stand, sobbing as he relived this moment. After Floyd was taken away by paramedics, he told Officer Chauvin that he looked at him as a maggot. On the body cam video, Officer Chauvin can be heard telling him, "We gotta control this guy because he's a sizable guy. Looks like he's probably on something." McMillan told him, "You respect me. I'm going to keep respecting you. You have a good night. Go home safe to your family, and I'll do the same."
And what were you trying to do at that point in time when you were talking to Mr. Chauvin? Why did you feel the need to talk to Mr. Chauvin?
Because what I watched was wrong.
And did you feel it was important to tell him that?
Yes, ma'am.
We'll get into more testimony right after this quick break from today's sponsors. Over the last year, I've spent a ton of time at home, which had me feeling extremely unmotivated to work out. But thankfully, working out with my Peloton bike makes it really hard for me to make excuses. Not much time before my daughter wakes up from her nap? They've got 20-minute classes. Not feeling like exerting yourself? Try a low-impact ride. I got my Peloton bike shortly after I had my daughter. I felt like I was so out of shape and frankly just needed an escape every day. Now, I feel like some of the instructors are actually my friends. My favorite workout is a 30-minute intervals and arms ride with my girl, Allie Love. And then afterwards, I like to do a legs or core strength class. Peloton has the best instructors with the best playlists. Whether you're in the mood for some hip-hop, pop, or country, the Peloton bike has the right music to keep you entertained and motivated all year long. Peloton has classes for every level. And as you progress, you can choose from a wide range of cycling classes that meet your level and keep you challenged every time you clip in. And it isn't just game-changing cardio. Add a strength class to your ride like I do, or combine cardio and strength in one workout with Bike Boot Camp to get a total body fitness experience. And you can get just one subscription for the whole family. Their all-access membership is more like a family plan for no additional cost. Get started on your Peloton journey. Go to onepeloton.com to learn more. That's onepeloton.com. Coloring your hair in the comfort of your own home is something a lot of us are doing nowadays. But you might be wondering how you would find the right color, and then what about the cost? Well, Madison Reed makes coloring your hair at home affordable, and they give you the tools you need to choose your perfect color. Madison Reed takes coloring your hair at home to the next level and gives you beautiful, professional hair color delivered right to your door, starting at just $22. For decades, there were only two options for coloring your hair. You could either try outdated at-home color or spend time and money at a salon, but not anymore. Madison Reed's color is unique. It's crafted by master colorists who blend nuances of light, dark, cool, and warm tones to create over 55 gorgeous multidimensional shades. And finding the perfect shade is pretty easy. You just go to their website, madison-reed.com, and take their quick online quiz that will ask you questions about your hair. Then they match you with your perfect shade. So do your hair coloring at home and look as if you just came from the salon. Now, Court Junkies can get 10% off plus free shipping on their first color kit by using the code COURT. Go to madison-reed.com and use the code COURT. That's madison-reed.com and use the code COURT. Courtney Ross had been dating George Floyd for 3 years at the time of his death. She met him at the Salvation Army, where he was working as a security guard. She said she was in a bad place and was crying when he came up to her and asked if they could pray together. They began dating not long after that. She testified that Floyd was a mama's boy and loved his mother, who had passed away a couple years prior, very much. She said he worked out every day and loved playing sports with the neighborhood kids. She told the jury that both she and Floyd had an opioid addiction they struggled with.
Both Floyd and I, our story, it's a classic story of how many people get addicted to opioids. We both suffered from chronic pain. Mine was in my neck and his was in his back. We both had prescriptions. But after prescriptions that were filled and we got addicted and tried really hard to break that addiction many times.
And were you each aware of each other's struggles with opioids?
Yes, eventually in our relationship we shared that.
And did you work together on that?
Absolutely.
On Cross, she said Floyd was hospitalized in March due to an overdose. She was also asked what he had saved her name as in his phone. She said, Mama. Seth Bravinder is a paramedic for Hennepin County EMS. He testified that when he got to the scene, his partner checked Floyd's pulse and pupils. Floyd was then put into the ambulance.
I remember walking in and the cardiac monitor was showing asystole. So.
Okay, so I'm going to stop you there because that's a word that not a lot of people know. What is asystole?
Flat line, so it's monitoring your cardiac electrical activity. I guess like flat line is the most layperson friendly term, but basically tells us your heart isn't really doing anything at that moment.
So there's essentially no activity in the heart.
Yes.
So when you kind of came back and saw that the monitor showed asystole, well, what's the significance of that just in terms of a patient's condition?
It's not a good sign for a successful resuscitation.
He testified that the longer someone goes without receiving resuscitation, the lower the chance they will be resuscitated. Derek Smith was another paramedic at the scene.
And when you approached, you said he was in handcuffs. As you approached him to inspect further, were the officers still on top of him?
The officers were still on him when I approached.
And what did you do when you approached?
I was assessing the scene and running through what care may be needed.
And did you take some initial steps, like checking for a pulse?
I checked for a pulse.
And did you also check the individual, Mr. Floyd's, pupils?
I did.
And what did you determine at that point?
They were large, dilated.
So you determined that his pupils were large and dilated. What about a pulse?
I did not palpate a pulse.
And when you say palpate, is that you didn't feel or detect a pulse?
I did not detect a pulse.
And what did his condition appear to be to you? Overall.
In lay terms, I thought he was dead. His heart isn't beating, and it should be. And the longer it isn't beating, the greater the likelihood this individual will not be resuscitated.
When someone is in the state that you're describing, are you looking for any opportunity to, you know, administer a shock or provide additional treatment that you might be able to?
Yes, he's a human being, and I was trying to give him a second chance at life.
David Pluger, now a retired Minneapolis police sergeant, but who was Chauvin's supervisor at the time, testified about their department's use of force policy. He said if someone is placed in the prone position, the person must then be placed in the side recovery position to ease their breathing.
Are you familiar with the term positional asphyxia?
Yes.
Now, how are you familiar with that term?
We've had it in training at MPD.
How long have you personally been aware of positional asphyxia?
A lot of years, 10, 15.
Okay. And based on your experience as a Minneapolis police officer, are the dangers of positional asphyxia generally known throughout the department?
Yes, I believe so.
That's something that officers are trained on?
Correct.
And when we talk about positional asphyxia, just at a high level, could you explain what positional asphyxia is as you've been trained?
If you restrain somebody or leave them on their chest and stomach for too long, their breathing can become compromised, and so you'd want to get them up out of that position after a while so they don't suffer breathing complications.
And that's why the policy requires in the training is that you roll someone onto the side recovery position.
Yes.
And are you aware of whether or not people are allowed to be transported in the prone position for strain?
I believe they should be transported in the recovery position.
And when you talk about the need to roll someone into the recovery position to alleviate breathing, you're talking about a situation where the pressure is from the subject's own body weight. Is that right?
That could be, yes.
That does not necessarily include additional pressure that might be applied.
Correct.
Lieutenant Richard Zimmerman with the Minneapolis Police Homicide Unit also testified about the use of force continuum, which is part of the Minneapolis Police Department's use of force policy. He said that the lowest level is just your presence at a scene in uniform. The next step up is your verbal skills to help diffuse a situation or learn more information about what's going on. The next step after that would be a soft technique, such as escorting a person by their arm. The next level is a hard technique, where you may have to use mace or handcuffs. Finally, the top level is deadly force. He said if you arrive at a scene and someone has a gun and is shooting at you, for example, you go to the top level.
Have you ever, in all the years you've been working for the Minneapolis Police Department, been trained to kneel on the neck of someone who is handcuffed behind their back in a prone position?
No, I haven't.
Is that, if that were done, would that be considered force?
Absolutely.
What level of force might that be?
That would be the top tier, the deadly force.
Why?
Because of the fact that if your knee is on a person's neck, that can kill him.
He was asked if he has received training on restraining people. He said yes.
Let me ask you this again. If you, as an officer, according to the training, you handcuff somebody behind the back, what's your responsibility with regard to that person from that moment on?
That person is yours. He's your responsibility. His safety is your responsibility. His well-being and is your responsibility.
Once you handcuff somebody, does that affect the amount of force that you should consider using?
Absolutely.
How so?
Once a person is cuffed, the threat level goes down all the way, you know, to they're cuffed. How can they really hurt you?
What do you mean by that?
Well, you know, if you're, you could have some guy try to kick you or something, but you can move out of the way. That person is handcuffed, you know, and they, the threat level is just not there.
He testified that he viewed all the videos from the incident. He agreed that Chauvin employed a use of force while on Floyd's neck and that he continued that force without any changes, even after the ambulance arrived.
Based on your review of the body-worn camera videos of the incident?
Yes.
And directing your attention into that moment when Mr. Floyd is placed on the ground?
Yes.
What is your, your view of that use of force during that time period?
Totally unnecessary.
As for any crowd that gathers around a scene like that, he said it doesn't matter, that as long as they aren't attacking you, it shouldn't have an effect on your actions. Two other officers, a sergeant and a lieutenant with the Minneapolis Police Department, testified that Chauvin attended crisis intervention courses and use of force trainings, and that a knee on the neck isn't a use of force that is authorized. Officer Nicole McKenzie, the medical support coordinator for the Minneapolis Police Department, testified that Chauvin was CPR trained. She also said that just because a person is speaking doesn't mean they are breathing adequately. Sergeant Jody Steiger, a sergeant with the LAPD who is on a use of force committee, testified that with what the officers had been called to the scene about, a possible counterfeit $20 bill, typically, you wouldn't expect to use any kind of force. Sergeant Steiger travels the country and reviews other police departments' use of force tactics. He said Floyd was resisting arrest when they tried to put him in the squad car, but when he was on the ground and slowed down his resistance, he said the officers should have slowed down or stopped their force as well. He said in his opinion, Chauvin's use of force on Floyd was deadly and excessive.
Because at the time of the restraint period, Mr. Floyd was not resisting. He was in the prone position. He was handcuffed. He was not attempting to evade. He was not attempting to resist. And the pressure that was being caused by the body weight could cause positional asphyxia, which could cause death.
As for the bystanders, he said on more than one occasion he has been in front of a hostile crowd, and that the bystanders in this case were not a threat.
When you reviewed the body-worn cameras, did you see anybody throw any rocks or bottles?
No, I did not.
Did you see anyone physically attack the officers?
No, I did not.
Did you hear foul language or name-calling?
There was some name-calling, yes, and some foul language, but that was about the most of it.
Did that factor into your analysis?
No.
Why not?
Because I did not perceive them as being a threat.
And why is that?
Because they were merely filming, and they were, most of it was their concern for Mr. Floyd.
And in terms of, you know, proportionality in the force continuum, is the officer able to increase the use of force on an individual based on the conduct of some third party over whom the subject has no control?
No, the officers can only use force based on the subject's actions.
Freeze frames taken from the body cameras of one of the officers were displayed. They showed that while Chauvin was on top of Floyd, and while Floyd was in the prone position, Chauvin's hand appeared to be pressing into the palm of Floyd's hand. Sergeant Steiger said that was a technique used to cause pain in order to get someone to comply. He said, either by squeezing of the fingers and bringing the knuckles together, which can cause pain, or also basically pulling the wrist into the hand, which can cause pain as well. Special Agent James Ryerson testified that although Chauvin weighed about 140 pounds, he had about 30 to 40 pounds worth of equipment on him that night. He also said that after reviewing all the videos in the case, he determined that Chauvin's knee and most of his weight was on Floyd's neck for the majority of time Floyd was on the ground, in the prone position. Then the Minneapolis police chief, Madaria Arredondo, took the stand. He was the one who fired Chauvin and the other three officers after watching the body cam videos. He said initially he watched the surveillance video from across the street and that nothing really stood out to him. But later, he was told about the video Darnella Frazier had posted online, and he watched it. He told the jury that a counterfeit bill is not a very serious crime in the city. Typically, the suspect isn't even taken into custody. He said there's been a shift over the years about only sending people to jail who need to be there. Chief Arredondo testified that sanctity of life is the pillar of their department's use of force policy.
Of all the things that we do as peace officers for the Minneapolis Police Department, and I mentioned the thousands of calls that our men and women respond to, it is my firm belief that the one singular incident we will be judged forever on will be our use of force. And so while it is absolutely imperative that our officers go home at the end of their shift, we want to make sure and ensure that our community members go home too. And so sanctity of life is absolutely vital, that that is the pillar for our use of force.
He said they implemented this philosophy in 2016. He was asked if Chauvin's actions followed their policy on de-escalation. He said, absolutely not.
That action is not de-escalation. And when we talk about the framework of our sanctity of life, and when we talk about the principles and values that we have, that action goes contrary to what we're taught.
As you reflect on Exhibit 17, I must ask you, is this a trained Minneapolis Police Department defensive tactics technique?
It is not.
Well, we read the departmental policy on neck restraints. Is this a neck restraint?
The conscious neck restraint by policy mentions light to moderate pressure. When I look at Exhibit 17, and when I look at the facial expression of Mr. Floyd, that does not appear in any way, shape, or form that is light to moderate pressure.
So is it your belief then that this particular form of restraint, if that's what we'll call it, in fact, violates departmental policy?
I absolutely agree that violates our policy.
He was asked if he's aware that Chauvin maintained this position for 9 minutes and 29 seconds. He said yes.
Is what you see in Exhibit 17, in your opinion, within Minneapolis Police Departmental Policy 5-300, authorizing the use of reasonable force?
It is not.
And why not?
It has to be objectively reasonable. We have to take into account the circumstances, information, the threat to the officer, the threat to others, the severity of that. So that is not part of our policy. That is not what we teach. And that should be condoned.
He said once Floyd had stopped resisting, And certainly once he was in distress and trying to verbalize that, it should have stopped.
There's an initial reasonableness in trying to just get him under control over the in the first few seconds. But once there was no longer any resistance, and clearly when Mr. Floyd was no longer responsive and even motionless, to continue to apply that level of force to a person proned out, handcuffed behind their back, that in no way, shape, or form is anything that is by policy, is not part of our training, and it is certainly not part of our ethics or our values.
On cross, the defense played the viral video from Facebook and Officer King's body cam video side by side, so the jury could see the different angles. Nelson pointed out that from the perspective of Darnella Frazier's camera, it appears as though Chauvin's knee is on Floyd's neck. From the perspective of Officer King's body camera, it appears that Chauvin's knee was more on his shoulder blade. Chief Arredondo agreed. Dr. Andrew Baker is the Hennepin County Chief Medical Examiner who performed the autopsy on George Floyd. He testified that Floyd had injuries on him that were consistent with being pinned on the pavement, including scrapes on his face, bruising on his nose, and tearing on his lip. His right pointer finger and middle finger knuckles were also scraped. As for his internal examination, Floyd's heart was slightly enlarged. Other than fluid in the lungs, those looked normal. In Floyd's stomach was what looked like bread, but he didn't see anything that resembled any pills. He said Floyd's coronary arteries were narrow and that he was also hypertensive, so he already needed extra pumping of the heart.
He listed the immediate cause of death as cardiopulmonary arrest, complicating law enforcement, subdual restraint, and neck compression.
Correct.
What does cardiopulmonary arrest mean?
That's really just fancy medical lingo for the heart and the lungs stopped. The heart, no pulse, no breathing.
So with respect to the term complicating, am I right in the understanding that this term means occurring in the setting of?
Yes.
Or in other words, cardiopulmonary arrest occurring in the setting of law enforcement, subdual restraint, and neck compression.
Correct.
So, Dr. Baker, can you tell us how it is physiologically that the subdual restraint and neck compression caused Mr. Floyd's death?
In my opinion, the physiology of what was going on with Mr. Floyd on the evening of May 25th is, you've already seen the photographs of his coronary arteries, so that you know he had very severe underlying heart disease. I don't know that we specifically got to it, counselor, but Mr. Floyd also had what we call hypertensive heart disease, meaning his heart weighed more than it should. So he has a heart that already needs more oxygen than a normal heart by virtue of its size, and it's limited in its ability to step up to provide more oxygen when there's demand because of the narrowing of his coronary arteries. Now, in the context of an altercation with other people that involves things like physical restraint, that involves things like being held to the ground, that involves things like the pain that you would incur from having your cheek up against the asphalt, an abrasion on your shoulder, those events are going to cause stress hormones to pour out into your body, specifically things like adrenaline. And what that adrenaline is going to do is it's going to ask your heart to beat faster. It's going to ask your body for more oxygen so that you can get through that altercation. And in my opinion, the law enforcement subdual restraint and the neck compression was just more than Mr. Floyd could take by virtue of those heart conditions.
He was asked if the drugs in Floyd's system were a direct cause of his death, and he said no.
Mr. Floyd's use of fentanyl did not cause the subdual or neck restraint. His heart disease did not cause the subdual or the neck restraint.
He testified that he was aware that a viral video was going around the internet, but he made sure not to watch it until after he was done with his exam. He didn't want to bias his exam by going in with any preconceived notion. On cross, he was asked if both heart disease, history of hypertension, and the drugs in Floyd's system played a role in his death. He said yes. Dr. Lindsay Thomas, a forensic pathologist who the state also called to the stand, agreed with Dr. Baker's conclusions.
In this case, I believe the primary mechanism of death is asphyxia or low oxygen.
So we'll come back to the mechanism in just a minute. Can you explain to the jury what this cause of death means and why you agree with it?
Well, it's kind of in two parts. So there's the cardiopulmonary arrest, which it doesn't provide a lot of additional clarifying information because, in a way, everyone dies of when your heart stops and your lungs stop. That's cardiopulmonary arrest. But as a forensic pathologist, I would use cardiopulmonary arrest when I'm to differentiate it from a cardiac arrest. So this is not a sudden cardiac death, a sudden cardiac arrhythmia. This is a death where both the heart and lungs stopped working. And the point is that it's due to law enforcement subdual restraint and compression. That is kind of what ultimately is the immediate cause of death, is the subdual restraint and compression.
And just so it's clear for the jurors, does cardiopulmonary arrest mean heart attack?
No.
Does it mean fatal arrhythmia as a primary cause of death?
No.
It simply means that the heart stops and the lungs have stopped.
Correct.
It's another way of simply describing death itself.
Right.
So if you put all this together, cardiopulmonary arrest, complicating law enforcement subdual restraint and neck compression, what does that mean?
Well, what it means to me is that the activities of the law enforcement officers resulted in Mr. Floyd's death.
She said there was no evidence that George Floyd would have died that night, except for the interactions with the police officers. On cross, she was asked about the drugs in Floyd's system.
You find a person at home, no struggle with the police, right? The person doesn't have a heart problem, but you find fentanyl and methamphetamine in this person's system at the levels that they are at, would you certify this as an overdose?
Again, in the absence of any of these other realities, yes, I could consider that to be an overdose.
But on redirect, she said that was not how George Floyd died. Dr. Jonathan Rich, a cardiologist, also agreed with their conclusions.
He was just simply unable, using all of his muscles of respiration, his chest wall, what we call accessory muscles of respiration, which are extra muscles that will be triggered in the event that you're having trouble breathing. He was trying to get in enough oxygen, and because he was unable to, because of the position that he was subjected to, as we just discussed, the heart thus didn't have enough oxygen either, which then means the entire body is deprived of oxygen.
So, low oxygen induced by positional asphyxia. Did you consider other possible causes of Mr. Floyd's death?
Sure. I tried, of course, to be as thorough as possible, but I focused mostly on two other potential causes. Number one is whether there could have been a primary heart contribution to George Floyd's death. And the second was whether a drug overdose could have caused his death.
So, doctor, would you tell the jury what is a primary heart event?
Sure. So, a lot of things can injure the heart. For example, if you do not take in enough oxygen, that will injure all the organs, including the heart. When I use the term a primary heart event, I mean something that originated from the heart itself. So, for example, a heart attack. All right, one of the arteries of the heart just suddenly got blocked completely, and a heart attack occurred. Or the heart just without any explanation, nothing else secondary inducing it, went into a serious ventricular arrhythmia, okay? So the bottom part of the heart, that part that we were talking about that needs to pump blood to the body, suddenly went into a chaotic rhythm all on its own. If any of those things happened, then I would consider that a primary heart issue, not being caused or secondary to something else.
So you considered whether or not Mr. Floyd might have passed away from a primary heart event or a drug overdose. Did you reach an opinion or conclusion to a reasonable degree of medical certainty as to whether either of those two causes explained Mr. Floyd's death?
Yes, I did.
Would you tell us your opinion?
Sure. After reviewing all of the facts and evidence of the case, I can state with a high degree of medical certainty that George Floyd did not die from a primary cardiac event, and he did not die from a drug overdose.
He said in the videos he watched, he heard one of the officers ask on two occasions if Floyd should be turned onto his side. He said the response was, no, just leave him.
And once the officer announced that he did not have a pulse anymore, I think he actually said he does not have one, was the exact words. At that point, the immediate response would then be to not only relieve him of the restraint, but at that point, now you've got to start CPR. You've got to start immediate chest compressions, because we know that if you can get to a patient right away, even when they've lost their pulse, even when they've gone into a cardiopulmonary arrest, there is a significant opportunity to save a life. But for every minute that transpires that you are not performing the basic life support and CPR measures, the literature would suggest an approximately 10 to 15% less chance of survival. It is why we pour so many resources these days into a community education and training for bystander CPR, because it's so effective and it works if the person can be tended to quickly enough.
He was asked if Floyd would have lived through the night of May 25th if he hadn't been restrained for over 9 minutes, and he said yes, Floyd would have survived. Dr. Martin Tobin, a pulmonologist at Loyola University Medical Center, took the stand and for hours went through the videos from the scene, as well as graphics and simulations, explaining in detail what was happening in each moment. He said by his calculations, Officer Chauvin's left knee was on Floyd's neck for more than 90% of the time. He said a healthy person would have died from the same restraint. He also identified what he believed to be the exact moment Floyd died, and said Chauvin kept his knee on Floyd's neck for 3 minutes and 27 seconds after that. One of the state's last witnesses was Seth Stoughton, an associate law professor at the University of South Carolina Law School. He told the court that he has authored book chapters and co-authored a book called Evaluating Police Uses of Force. He testified about what a reasonable officer would have done in this case.
As I said, a reasonable officer would have seen that this appears to be a point of conflict, would have heard that Mr. Floyd was describing himself as claustrophobic, would have understood Mr. Floyd to be offering some alternatives, right? Laying on the ground or sitting up in the front of the car, as opposed to being put in the back of the car. In other words, the point of contention does not appear to be police custody, right? Mr. Floyd does not appear to be objecting to being kept in police custody, but instead to be objecting to being put in the back of a vehicle.
He said, given the range of other options available, putting someone in the prone position wasn't necessary.
Given the range of other alternatives available to the officers, it's just not appropriate to prone someone who is at that point cooperative.
What is the purpose of placing someone in the prone position in accordance with generally accepted police standards?
Yes, the prone position is a very useful position in policing for getting control of someone for purposes of handcuffing them. Again, the prone position is just basically face down, right? Their chest, front of the hips, on the ground. when officers are struggling with someone or when they're handcuffing someone who they anticipate struggling with, you'll often see officers put someone into that prone position for purposes of handcuffing because it's very difficult for someone to fight or to resist as they're face down on the ground, especially once their arms are out at their sides. However, the prone position, as useful as it is for handcuffing, is supposed to be transitory. It's used for handcuffing, and then as soon as someone has been handcuffed, you take them out of that position.
And so that sums up the prosecution's case. I really wanted to make this into one episode, but that was impossible given all the testimony in this trial. As much as I have to shorten things already to make it into a podcast, I don't want to skip out on what I perceive to be some of the most important details. So I've decided to divide it up into two episodes. But instead of releasing part two next week, I'm going to be releasing it tomorrow. In part two, I'll cover the defense case, the conclusion, and what comes next. Thanks everyone for listening. Until next time. It can be hard to find balance in today's world. Whether you work full-time or have a family, does it ever feel impossible to get your life on track? Gain that balance with the help of Fittish CBD. Fittish is a wellness brand that offers affordable and transparent CBD options, ranging from tinctures that help promote a better sense of overall balance to a wide array of skincare that fits into your lifestyle. I've been using the Doing It CBD moisturizer on my skin, and it's super lightweight, doesn't have any kind of annoying fragrance, and it doesn't feel sticky or gooey. In fact, it makes my skin look more even and fresh, even without makeup. Check out Fittish.com or The Fittish on Instagram to see incredible testimonials from customers. One review says, "I literally just got Doing It this week and I'm already in love. With the pandemic stress and the mask wearing constantly, my skin hates me. No makeup needed. My skin looks dewy and fresh. No discoloration and uneven skin tone. This is a life changer." Try Fittish CBD for yourself to get the best wellness in the game at Fittish.com and use the code COURT15 for 15% off your order. That's FITISH.com and enter the code COURT15 at checkout for 15% off your order. Fittish, a clear mind and clearer skin for the win.